All right, so good morning, everyone, and thank you once again to everyone for coming. I'm going to keep on making the reminder to put your name in the chat box if you have not already, either as a direct message to me or as a larger message to everyone to make sure that you can get credit. And then also the source sheet is either of those two links that I just put in the chat box. I want to thank Zeichmann's, of course, for hosting this this third of the three Shiurim, the three classes on business ethics. I want to thank Steve Roth, Reem, the Bayit, and Shari Shemaim, all of which are helping to make this possible. So thank you all to them. And also, I want to acknowledge Jeffrey Silver, who's dedicated this class in honor of the birthday of his granddaughter, Yakira. So she should have a happy birthday. And thank you to Jeffrey Silver for donating and for dedicating this shiur. This class as well. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump in. Today's focus, what we're going to talk about, is reporting unethical behavior. Now, as a little disclaimer at the very beginning, I know a little bit of Torah, but a little bit of Torah that I know is drastically more than what I know about accounting. So please keep in mind if anything that I say here, you know, is certainly don't take this as necessarily what you should do, I mean, as advice for accounting in general, and even as halachic advice, I wouldn't necessarily follow this, everything that we're going to focus on right here for any actual practical questions that come up, but just as something for us to focus and learn together, and obviously if you have any practical questions that come up here or elsewhere, I'll feel free to reach out to a rabbi who is able to give guidance and advice specifically on these very complicated matters of ethics and Jewish law and also legal and accounting factors. So that's a little disclaimer at the beginning, but this should be just an interesting conversation, exploration of a topic of reporting unethical behavior. So I want to start with source number one. Source number one is a passage from the Gemara, from the Talmud Masechet Sanhedrin, Minayin l'roa et chavero shu tovea b'nahar. We're getting a little bit of noise in the background, so here we go. How do we know? Minayin l'roa et chavero shu tovea b'nahar. How do we know? From where is it derived? That one who sees another drowning in the river, or being dragged away by a wild animal, or being attacked by bandits, is obligated to save him or her, right? How do we know that I have an obligation if I see someone being hurt? This right here, this is drowning in a river, dragged away by a wild animal. These are life-threatening problems. How I'm obligated to save this person? Because, Talmud Lamar, lo ta'amod al dam re'acha, the Torah tells us, you shall not stand idly by the blood of another. Literally, lo ta'amod al dam, do not stand on the blood of someone else. In other words, when I see someone, if I see someone dying, I have a Torah obligation to save that person. That's what the Talmud source number one is telling us. Also, by the way, I didn't mention this before, but everyone should feel free, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to unmute and make a comment. Feel free to put it in the chat box, either to me or to everyone. Happy to entertain any and all comments. I'll try to monitor the chat box as well. But please feel free to interact in any way. Also, feel free to, I'm recording the audio but not the video. If you want to come turn on your camera, I'm happy to look you in the face as well. You don't worry about if you're eating and food falling out of your mouth. No one's going to be paying attention to that. And the video is also not being recorded. But, okay. So that was the Gemara, the Talmud and Sanhedrin source number one. Told us that we have an obligation to step up if someone is at risk of life, we see that we have to step in. So now Rambam, Maimonides, in source number two, says the following. He says this idea, but expands it slightly. He's Hiranu Milihit Rashel Batzlat Nefesh. We are warned against being lax in saving a single life. Kshenirehu B'sakanat Mavet. When we see someone is at risk of dying, and then he adds an additional word. Oh, Hahefsed. or of a loss, right? The case that the Talmud told us in source number one was where there was like risk to life, drowning, being dragged away by a wild animal, attacked by bandits. That's an issue of life and death. But Maimonides in source number two is extending it, even a hefset, even a financial loss, it seems. If we have it in our capacity to save this person, for example, let's say a person's drowning in the river and we know how to swim, we have an obligation to step up. But what's meaningful here is that Maimonides is saying it's not just when it comes to life and death that we are prohibited from standing idly and just watching it happen, but if we see that there is something that's going wrong, that we could prevent loss of life or even loss of monetary, if we could do something, we have an obligation to stand in. We have to step up. What's interesting, though, and you could look at these sources and you would say, okay, we should always say something. If we see something, if there's a risk of loss, of certainly of life, but even of finances, if there's something that we see that's not right, that could cause problems, we have an obligation to step up. That's what we see from these first two sources. Then we have another passage in the Talmud. Talmud Masechet Pesachim, source number 3, page 113b, tells the following short story. The story is as follows. Kihad de Tuvia Chata. There was an incident where this person named Tuvia sinned. The way Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz's translation here, and he adds the words with sexual immorality, though I don't know if we necessarily have to say that. But okay, that's what we're saying right now. Tuvia had sinned. Vata Zigud Lechudei V'asibe Kameh Derav Papa. Now this guy, this individual named Zigud apparently witnessed this. He sees what Tuvia has done. So Zigud comes and came alone to testify about him before Rav Papa. Now in the court of Jewish law, you need two witnesses. Right, one witness saying something is not going to reach the threshold of being able to really do anything. So Zigud, nonetheless, knows that Tuvia has done wrong. He's seen unethical behavior done by Tuvia, and he steps up and he testifies against Tuvia in the court of Rav Papa. And you would think that Rav Papa would thank Zigud, say, you know, you saw something was wrong and you stepped up and you did something, and yet, that's not what happens. The Talmud continues to say, Nagdei l'Zigud. Rav Papa instructed that Zigud be lashed. He receives a punishment. Reading this, we should be confused, and Zigud himself was confused. He said, Amarle, Tuvia chata v'Zigud mingid? Zigud says, I don't understand. Tuvia is the one who sinned, and I'm the one getting lashes? That doesn't make any sense. Amarle, Ian, Rav Papa says, you know, you're right. It doesn't make sense. You sinned and you get the lashes, but look at this. Dichtiv lo yakum eid echad b'ish. We have a rule, the Torah tells us, one witness shall not rise up against a man. You have to have two witnesses. Right? It can't be one. You have to have two. Two people have to step up. You have to have two witnesses in order to do anything. And you, vat l'chudach azhar tve. And you testified as one person. And one person can't accomplish anything here. Cannot accomplish anything here. He says, Azal debe shemra ba'alma. Shemra ba'alma kama kat be. You testified against him alone. You have merely given him a bad reputation. There was no benefit. You testified. You wanted to report unethical behavior. But what you did is nice. But you didn't accomplish anything with it. And so what you essentially did is you slandered someone. You've spoken Lashon Hara. You said negatively about someone, and you couldn't accomplish anything with it. You shouldn't have done anything. You should report if you could do something. But you weren't going to accomplish anything, Zigud. You should deserve lashes, because what you've done is just slandered someone and not accomplished anything good. So I have a comment in the chat box here. You have to save the other only as long as there is no downside to you, i.e. physical risk or financial loss, or you always have to save them. So it's interesting. This came up also, I remember, during the very beginning of COVID, when talking about doctors putting themselves in harm's way to go to the hospital to treat someone with COVID. Do they have an obligation to step in? Do they Does one have to put oneself at physical risk in order to save someone else's life? So really, I'm sure Rabbi Torchiner has or will. I'm sure he has. I think I've even heard it. A class on people voluntarily risking their lives to save other people. But I think the consensus of authorities is that one cannot be obligated. You can't be obligated to save someone else if there's a downside, potential downside to you. But certainly one has the right to. But here we're talking, as Maimonides had said in source number two, you have the ability to swim and that person's drowning. If you can't swim, it doesn't make sense to jump in. But if you can swim and that person's drowning, you can save them, you do something. If I see someone is sinning, And I'm reporting this behavior to, for whatever reason, to bring him to justice. But I can't. I'm not able to accomplish anything. So that's the case of source number three, where we say zigud, you shouldn't have said anything because you opened your mouth, but you've just basically slandered this person, and you didn't accomplish anything. So you should not have said anything. And that's what we see is from source number three that yes, we should. You should step in if there's harm being done. One should step up with a little caveat in source number three that maybe there's a difference whether you can make it, maybe there's a distinction between whether you can make a difference or not. If you can solve something, if you can actually do something, step in. But if you can't, you're just slandering. What's the point? What did you gain? You said something, but you didn't accomplish anything. Now to source number four is in a similar vein. We have this passage, contemporary-ish, Rabbi Ovadia Yosef in source number four was opposed with the following question. The question was Hamishtadel Lasig Rishayon Nehiga. Someone is trying to get a driver's license. V'ucholeb Machlat Simuya Sheina Mitgalit Al Yedei Bidikat Rofe Regila. This person who's applying for a driver's license has some sort of disease, a hidden disease that cannot be discovered by means of a standard medical evaluation. Whatever evaluation is needed for this person to be able to get a license, it's not going to uncover this particular disease. Ha'im mutar l'rof o ha'ishi, o l'mish yode b'beiro machalato. So now, let's say this person's patient is applying for, no one knows he's a patient. So-and-so, you know, Joe, is there anyone named Joe on the call? Yeah, there's a Joel. Okay, so, Francis. There's no Francis here. Francis applies for a driver's license. I'm assuming I don't think there's a Francis here. Okay, Francis applying for a driver's license, he suffers from some medical disorder that no one knows about, but I'm the doctor, I know about it, and I know that it's not safe for him to get the driver's license, it's not safe for him to drive. So am I allowed, lo'adia al-kach misrad harishui, am I allowed to tell the Department of Motor Vehicles, whoever it is who's giving the license, do I have the right, am I permitted to tell them and inform them and say, Francis is applying for a driver's license, you should not give him a driver's license, it is not safe. It is not safe for him, it is not safe for the public. To block him from receiving a license in order not to cause traffic accidents and disasters, or perhaps, Rav Ovadia Yosef was asked, or maybe this is just bichiluv v'lashon hara. Maybe this is just gossiping. This is like what Zigu did, standing up just saying something negative about someone else. So does the doctor have the right to? Or maybe even obligation to? So here's the answer that Rabbi Yosef gives. I'm on the bottom of page one. Also, by the way, in case people do not yet have the source sheet, I'm going to put it once again in the chat box. And also, if you have not yet signed in by sending a message to me or to everyone in the chat box, please do so. Okay, but now, so we're on the bottom of page one. Rabbi Ovadia Yosef was asked this question. The doctor knows that this driver is not safe. No one else knows. Can he tell the Department of Motor Vehicles, Service Ontario, whoever gives the license, can he tell them? So tshuva, here's the response. Ne'emar b'Torah, lo telech rechil be'amecha. The Torah tells us you shall not be a gossip monger among your people. You should not go around telling people, certainly telling private information, medical information from one person to the other. V'chatav Rambam, and Maimonides himself writes, Ezu rachil, ze shetuen dvarim v'olech mizeh lazeh. What is someone who's a gossip monger? One who brings words about people from place to place and says, so-and-so did this, or I heard this about so-and-so. Even though it is true, behold, it destroys the world and the sin is too great to bear. So he opens up by saying, it is not a good thing to start telling people, hey, you know, Francis has this medical issue, or hey, Francis said this, that's not appropriate. It's a violation of a Torah law. But, bottom of page one, and the English is on the top of page two, umikol makom, nonetheless, nire shekol ze ba'ofen shemitkaven rak lehashmitz et chavero uvazoto. This appears to be in a situation that he intends to dirty his friend and to disgrace him. But if he has intention for a clear benefit or to prevent damage, it is permitted. Meaning the time that we're going to consider this a gossip mongerer is when you are doing something just to slander that person. And maybe, just thinking back at the case that we saw about Zigud earlier in source number three, maybe, you know, Zigud knows that he's not going to accomplish anything in court because he's a sole witness. And he wants to do it anyway because he wants people to know this about Tuvia. So I think Rabbi Yosef is saying here is that, yeah, if all you're doing is trying to spread word to hurt Francis, the person with this medical condition, then it's not appropriate. But if your goal is ultimately to protect the public, I'm trying to do this because I want to protect other people, protect him, protect other people, then it is permitted. V'lechen, and he also adds the following, V'lechen, benidon shelanu, in our case, shecholeb machlas muya, there's a hidden disorder, kamo machlas nifila, v'keret sabat, let's say it's epilepsy or something like that. Ma'alim mimisrada rishui et tavar machlato, and this person is now hiding from the disorder to get a driver's license. That yachol yot shekabel hatkafat machla b'shat shenoheg, and it could be that he has an episode while driving, and that could cause a life-threatening disaster. A little davar ligrom asonot benefesh chas v'shalom, it could cause, God forbid, terrible accidents, terrible things if he has an accident while driving. Bevadai, certainly, shechova u'mitzvah is an obligation and a mitzvah. Leodel l'misrad harishui al machalato shelzeh, you are obligated. One is obligated to inform the authorities about this to prevent them from giving him the license. Kadesh lo yigrom nezek o sakana l'tzibor, so that it doesn't cause damage to the public, to the community. Right? It's nice. Yes, this guy here has his right to privacy, and he has a right that people shouldn't know about this, but not at the expense of other people. And he needs to. The doctor has an obligation to say something. There is a potential of a real problem here. This is a life-threatening problem. There's a real problem that's at stake. There's a real danger. He has an obligation to say something. So, and all the things about Lashon Hara, is it really right to spread something that's secret, that's private, it's not public information, is it okay? Rabbi Ovadia Yosef says, it's obligatory to share. You can't say, well, it was private, who am I to start sharing this information? No, you have to share it. Uvazen, he concludes with this, I think, a very clever notion here. Uvazeh, with this, yesh lefaresh, gam ken kavanat pasuk, we could also understand that this is explicit in the verse in the Torah. And the verse in the Torah is source number 5. What are the two ideas that we've seen so far? We've seen two verses in the Torah. We've seen, on the one hand, lo telech rachil be'amecha, we should not be as a gossip monger spreading things. Then immediately after that, the verse says, lo ta'amod al dam re'echa, you shall not stand on your friend's blood. Rabbi Yosef says, look at these two verses, these two statements are juxtaposed, they're put together. And this is what the Torah means. Lo tilech rechil be'amecha, lo ta'amod al dam re'echa. You should not go telling things about, reporting things about someone else to other people. And then it says, but you should also not stand idly by. And he says, she'af al pi she'asur lecha liyod rechil, even though it is forbidden to reveal your friend's secret, you should not be going around saying, he did this, he did that, or he's plotting to this, he's plotting to that. You shouldn't start being a gossip monger. You shouldn't start being megala sod, revealing secrets. Mikol makom, nonetheless, lo tamod al dam re'echa, do not stand on your friend's blood. Ve'alecha lo hu'idi al chavercha, k'di shishmor minezef esakana. You have an obligation to inform your friend to prevent damage or danger. In other words, what Rabbi Yosef is saying is that yes, we do have this principle of not going around and just tattling, not going and just telling what other people are doing or saying. But we also have an obligation to protect other people. And when the two come against each other, when it's tattling or threats, tattling, I don't want to share this information, but it's also, there's good reason to. It could be damaging if I didn't share this information. the damaging, potentially damaging information wins out, and you have an obligation. You have an obligation to step up. You have an obligation to report it. Even though it's secret, how can I do this? Is it Lashon Hara? Is it gossip mongering? The Torah, the rule, Rabbi Avadi Yosef says, the other side wins out. There's a reason, there's a benefit for this. It's a great risk if this is not reported. You have to report it. So that's part one of this. This idea that when we have the two going against each other, do I have the right to share private information? Well, if this what I've witnessed, if I've witnessed unethical behavior and my reporting it could prevent loss or damage or harm in any way to anyone, and I have an obligation to step up. Parenthetically, I think you can't discount what the Talmud said in source number 3 and what Rabbi Avadi Yosef said. We have to make sure that we're doing it for the right reasons. And this Rabbi, there's the Chafetz Chaim, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan, was a big rabbi. He spoke a lot about Lashon Hara, about gossiping. He spoke about how bad it was. But he gives all different rules when you can share private, personal, you can gossip, essentially. And one of those things is that you have to know that you're doing it for the right reasons. If I'm reporting this behavior because I just don't like the guy who's did the behavior, that's very different, or might be different, than if I'm reporting it because I want to make sure that that corrective measures are taken, and that whoever is at risk of being harmed here will not get harmed. And I brought for you just a text that you all know probably much better than I do, from the CPA Code of Professional Conduct. But the idea, in source number 6, a member or firm shall not disclose any confidential information concerning the affairs of any client, former client, employer, or former employer, right? There's this idea, you don't just start sharing information. If I have confidential information, I don't have the right to start just like sharing it. At the same time, in the Code of Conduct Guidance Rule 206, 5 through 7, there's also the awareness that if I see something that doesn't seem right, something is not making sense, there's a misstatement somewhere that I should be reporting. Source number 7, paragraph number 5, a member who participates in an engagement to provide assurance on the financial statements of an entity who believes the financial statements of an entity contain a misstatement should communicate that belief to the person responsible for the assurance engagement. If, after consultation, the member continues to believe the financial statements contains a misstatement, I think there's a problem here, the member should communicate that belief to one of the firm's senior partners. You go up, there's like a chain of command, and you go up. Where possible, the communication should be dated and issued prior to the issuance of the financial statements, should be retained by the member in the firm for a reasonable period of time, so that I can know that I'm reporting this. I think something's not right here. I don't know if this necessarily means malicious intent. It could just be mistaken. But the idea here is that if I see something, and I believe something's a misstatement, I should clarify that. But it's not just free-for-all, and that's in paragraph number 6. Before communicating with one's firm's senior partners, the member referred in paragraph 5 should consider whether the concern results in material misstatement of the financial statements, whether the member possesses sufficient expertise, knowledge of the circumstances, do I actually know what I'm talking about? Or whether the member should first discuss the matter with the person in another firm. Should I get a second opinion on this? Like, I don't know what I'm doing here. Maybe there's what I think is a misstatement is not correct. And maybe that sort of plays into the thing we saw with Zigud in the passage before. You got to make sure that you know what you're talking about, and that when I whatever it is that I'm going to comment, that I'm going to say, is going to be accurate and can make a difference here. And just saying something, reporting something without knowing what I'm talking about, or without knowing the impact of what it is questionable or problematic. And that I think sort of fits alongside with what we've seen so far. All of this, I think, is the first part of what I wanted to focus on, which is this idea of, do I have the right? Should I be reporting unethical behavior? If I see something wrong, should I be saying something? And I think the conclusion is, if there's risk, there's real risk to some party, certainly life, but even of finances, we would say that there is an obligation to stay up, say something, to report it, to make sure that whatever parties that could be harmed are not going to be harmed here. We save whatever parties could be harmed here. There's a separate part to this conversation, though. And that's this issue about turning someone in. Turning someone into the authorities. And for this, I think it's helpful to put our heads in the minds of the rabbis who are living 2,000 years ago in Rome. And this will come up and be relevant later on. But you have to realize that the rabbis in Talmudic times did not necessarily have a warm and fuzzy and enjoyable, pleasant relationship with the powers that be. The government and the Jews were not necessarily always getting along. It wasn't necessarily a great partnership and relationship. And that's important to keep in mind as we begin this conversation about turning someone into the government authorities, because the rabbis didn't necessarily have a great relationship with the Romans. They didn't necessarily have a great relationship with the secular powers that be. And that's going to partially inform part of the conversation that we're going to have right now. Source number 8. The passage in Masechet Rosh Hashanah, the Talmud tells us in Rosh Hashanah, source number 8, on the top of page 3. Hamisurot, the informers, people who inform on other people, snitches, the tattlers. Vish shepirshu midarchei tzibur, vishnatnu chititam be'eretz achayim. Various people's informers, people who separate from the community, people who cast fear over the land of the living. All of these people, people whose company we wouldn't want to be in, Yordin le Gehinom, v'nirodin ba le dori dorot. They descend to Gehinom, they descend to some sort of hell equivalent, and are judged there for generations and generations. They never leave. They are in judgment forever. It's not a good place. These are people that already the Talmud in source number 8 puts an informer in a category, in a class of people that we wouldn't want to be with, and the punishment is a severe punishment. The rabbis do not look favorably about the person who reports. Yes, yes, we also have in the Shemona Esrei about informers, people who, exactly, yeah, I'm not sure who that was, but yes, I think it might have been Jerry said that?
Yeah,
that's in the Shemona Esrei as well. Very negative feelings towards the person who's reporting someone else to the authorities. And here's, plays this out as a story in source number 9, a passage in Masechet Gittin, source number 9. Shalach le Mar Utva le Rabbi Elazar. Mar Utva, the exilarch in Babylonia, sent a letter to Rabbi Elazar. People who stand over and torment me, they're bothering me. They're harassing me. They're doing terrible things to me, and I have the power to deliver them into the government. I could very easily send a message to the government. They could be arrested, thrown in jail. I could get rid of them. They're bothering me. I could stop them. What's the halacha? Am I allowed to report them? Rabbi Elazar scored parchment and wrote him the following verse. Right? He just wrote him a note. What's the verse that he sent him? I said, I will take heed to my ways, that I do not sin with my tongue, and I will keep a curb upon my mouth while the wicked is before me. Meaning, even though the wicked is before me, still, I will keep a curb on my mouth. He sends back to him very simply, don't say anything. They're tormenting you. They're harassing you. Be quiet. Don't report them to the authorities. Barakfa sent back to him, they're tormenting me a great deal. Kametzari li tuba. It's terrible. It is awful the way they are treating me. I can't do this. Still, Rabbi Elazar sent to him, resign yourself to the Lord and wait patiently for him. The verse indicates, resign yourself to the Lord, i.e. do not do anything, and he will strike them down. Maruk was saying, I need to do something, and Rabbi Elazar repeatedly says, do not turn them in. It is not on you to turn them in. They are bad people. They are doing bad things. God will deal with it. You do not report them. Very strong story here. Maimonides, in source number 10, we saw earlier, has also very, very strong language, and spoiler alert, we're going to qualify a little bit of what Maimonides is going to say here later on, but so don't leave the Zoom after reading Maimonides, because there's more to come. But Maimonides in source number 10 says, it is permissible to kill an informer in any country, even in the present age. He's a medieval rabbi, and when the court no longer meets out capital punishment, it is permitted to kill him before he informs. Right? We are seeing the informer as a terrible, terrible person. Jerry was saying we pray that informers should be destroyed. Where are we here? My mom is going, don't just pray. Do something about it. If someone you know is about to inform, you can kill them. When he says, I will inform on so-and-so and endanger his person and or his property, even if they're not, if someone's informing on someone that's going to lead to their death, okay, but if you're informing that's going to lead to their loss of property, even of property of minimal value, mamon kal, it's a little bit, they're reporting someone, it's going to be $100, $1,000, very little value. He tiras molamita, he has made it permissible for others to kill him. Very, very strong words Maimonides here is using. The person is informing. They're informing what? It's going to lead to what? This other person's loss of a little bit of money? And yet the informer can be killed. Again, we're going to qualify this in a little bit. But it's, I think it's important to think about, to consider, what is the reason that Maimonides has such strong language here? And actually, I'm curious to pose it to anyone here. Why would you think that Maimonides is using such strong language about the way we would treat an informer? Any thoughts on that? So we'll see in a little bit, I think, what a reason is. So we'll see. Even for mana, if it's a life-threatening thing, I can understand. Life-threatening is life-threatening. Like we saw in source number one, you have to step up to save someone. If the informer is going to end up killing, lead to the execution of someone, I should stop the informant, even if it's going to be I have to kill the informant in order to save the person's life. But monetary value, it's a startling idea. We'll come back to this. I have another story, though. Another story in source number 11. Bava Metzia. So Rabbi Elazar, the Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon, Ashkach Lahu Paragona de Katafis Ganbe. He finds a certain officer, Roman, non-Jewish officer, government officer, whose job was to arrest thieves. Amarle, Heichichad Lahu. How are you able to arrest them, right? How do you go about actually arresting? It's got to be very difficult. How do you find them? How do you arrest them? He's not asking, like, morally, how do you arrest them? He's like, practically, how do you do it? And they have a little bit of a conversation back and forth about different policing techniques. And then Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon, says, I got a great technique for you. Ta agamercha heichi tavid. I'll tell you how you should do it. I'll tell you how you really bring in the crooks, the criminals here. Ol be'arbeshai lechanuta. At the fourth hour of the day, it's in the morning, go to the tavern. Ki chazit inish tekashati chamra. V'ka naki kasadi yedei. V'ka minam den sho'oli lave. So you go into the tavern, you go into the pub, it's in the morning time, you walk in, and you look around, you see who's there, and if you see someone sitting at the bar with a cup in hand, and they're falling asleep. It's the morning already. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. Right? And yet there they are sitting in the pub and they're falling asleep. So you see them, start trying to figure out exactly who they are. Start trying to find out, ask some questions about them. Top of page 4. Eat Zorma Rabbananhu. So if he is a Torah scholar and he's the Minayam and he's falling asleep here, Agdumi Kadin Lagirse. So then I know, you know why he was falling asleep. He's falling asleep because he's a rabbi. He's learning Torah. He was up late at night learning Torah. He woke up early to learn more Torah. Now he's at the bar and he's drinking. That's why he's falling asleep, because he was up early or late, asleep late, because he was learning so much Torah. I poelhu Kadin Ka Avite. If he's a worker, he's a laborer. So you know what? He's falling asleep because he was up really early, broke up at the crack of dawn to get to work. And he worked, now he's taking a break. So why is he tired? Because of that. Via vite balilia. And if he's someone who works at night, so reduti redid. He must be, so if he works at night, no one heard him working. It is possible this is because he draws copper wires, which is a form of labor that does not produce noise. Right? If you see he's falling asleep and you can come up with very justifiable reasons why he's tired, because he's up late, because he was a Torah study, or he was a laborer. Vilo, but if he's none of these, if you ask him, who are, what do you do for a living? And he's got no good explanation, no good job. Then you know, ganvehu, v'tfase. Then you know he's a thief. And he's exhausted because he was up early, you know, stealing, robbing people's houses. That's what he is. He's a thief. Is there a question there? Yeah, Miriam.
Isn't that really jumping to conclusions? There could be 101. He was up late with his children. Like, and who's, what rabbi should be in the morning in the tavern drinking wine?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't feel so good either.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not sure how much, you know, continued investigation went on. Whether he was just, hey, he's falling asleep. Okay, you know, grab him. He's a thief. I'm not sure how much. There may have been more more investigation that would go on to determine, you know, maybe he has an alibi. Maybe he was up late at night with this. I don't know. It's a good question. But maybe he's just sort of giving like a rule of thumb. You know, people are falling asleep early in the morning. It's a good. Your question notwithstanding, it's a good question, Mary. It's a good question. Anyway, this is the idea that the rabbi has. Apparently, this police officer thought it was a brilliant idea. It's like, oh, I never thought about this. He goes and tells his supervisor, goes all the way up, and they say, wow, that's a great idea. It was heard in the king's palace they were talking about this great method of finding thieves. So the king's minister said to them, okay, karaina de irgata, igrata, iu liu prunka. Let the reader of the letter be its messenger. In other words, great idea, you do it. So that's what he does. Atiyu al Rabbi Elazar for Rabbi Shimon the Katafis Ganvi. So they brought Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon, and he proceeded to arrest thieves. This became his thing. He would go to the. He's a great detective. He had this great method, and they had. He was now employed as a police officer who was arresting thieves. Shalach le Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, Chometz ben Yayin. Yeshua ben Korcha sends to him, vinegar the son of wine. Your father is wine, you are vinegar. You're spoiled, you're terrible, you're awful. Bad name calling here. Ad matai atam moser amo shel Elokeinu lahariga. Until when will you inform the nation of our God to be sentenced to execution? You are just taking these people, these are Jews, taking them, handing them over to the authorities, and they're being executed. How long will you keep this up for? You're a terrible person. Shalach le, he says back, Kotzimani mechalamin hakerem. I am merely eradicating thorns from the vineyard. These aren't good people. I'm not reporting good people, law-abiding citizens that are. I'm not taking the holy rabbi and throwing him into jail and leading to his. I'm not doing that. I'm eradicating the thorns. These are bad people. You're telling me I shouldn't report the bad behavior of bad people? And he says back to him, Yavo ba'al hakerem, v'chled kutsav. Let the owner of the vineyard, with the capital O, come. The owner of the vineyard will eradicate his own thorns. In other words, this is not on you. They're bad people. You should send them away. Lock them up in jail. He says, no. Let the owner of the vineyard be the one to clear the thorns. This is not for you. You should not be doing this. It's a harsh back and forth. But Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha is ultimately concluding, it doesn't matter if they're thieves. It doesn't matter if you have the right. Lo tamar adam reyecha. You have to report. You don't report it to the authorities. Maybe you report it internally. Maybe you tell the thief, you got to return this stuff. But to report him to the authorities? To go to the Romans and say, this? Not okay. Not okay.
What if he stole your things?
Meaning if Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha was a victim here?
Yep.
So it sounds like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha would say, even if I'm the victim, I should be reporting this. I should not be reporting this.
So carte blanche to thieves.
Not to thieves, but to reporting to the authorities. You can deal with it in other ways. Deal with it internally. I see something happening here, let's deal with it internally. But to report this to the outside? Not okay. That's what he's saying. nonetheless, I mean, so you can understand Rav Shmuel ben Karcha, why he would say, I mean, I don't know if you can explain it, but he believes that it's not appropriate for one of us to be reporting, let God will deal with it. He's doing bad things, God will deal with it. It's interesting also, we'll come back to this again, but if you notice the language that Rabbi Shimon Korcha used, when he first sent a message to Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon, he said to him, Ad matay ata moser amo shel Elokeinu lahariga? For how long, until when will you inform on the nation of our God? To execution. Meaning he's seeing that this is not just, I don't know what was happening in this time with thieves, but he's specifically saying, how long will you keep on doing this that is killing people? He's saying they're bad people. He says God will take care of them. It's, keep in mind the language that he used about Moser Lahariga, handing them over to be executed. But what's the justification? We'll come back to that again. But what's the justification for Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon? Rabbi Shimon, what's the justification for him? So the Ritva, in source number 12, says here, I mean, he's an informer, right? We saw before, we saw these sources, the informers are in like the deepest pits of hell. The rabbi told the other rabbi, let them harass you, don't say anything. So why is he informing? So the Ritva, source number 12, says here, Hacha de shlicha de malchahu, medini ha-malchut laharog belo edim, v'atra l'asir ha-olam, l'asir ha-olam. The Ritva says, look, the king has the right to kill people. The king has the right to keep law and order, right? The king has to do that. And that is the Torah even, I didn't include this in the text of the Ritva, but the Ritva says the Torah empowers a king, the Torah empowers a government to rule with force so that there's shalom, it keeps law and order. The government is necessary for there to be law and order, and the government has the right to do things even beyond. And so, the Ritva attempts to somewhat justify Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon's job here in saying that this is necessary for the government to function. The government has a right to do this, so he's allowed to facilitate and help. In the end of the day, source number 13, though, actually before source number 13, in the end of the day, though, we end up coming out with in accordance to many of the codes of law, we come out more in the favor of Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha than Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. In other words, the codes do end up ruling in favor of saying, reporting to the authorities is not an ideal. You take care of it internally. Someone's misbehaving, I witness unethical behavior, take care of it internally. To report it outside, that could lead, Rabbi Shimon Korcha says, people being sentenced to death, that's not appropriate. That's not acceptable. I mean, you can think about it like this, right? Let's assume that the Romans were executing for theft. That's not, according to Jewish law, that's not the appropriate punishment. Theft, you pay back. Maybe you pay back double. Maybe in certain circumstances, you pay back 4 or 5 times the amount that was stolen. But execution, that's not appropriate. That's not the way the Torah requires. So to facilitate the execution, you could call that an unethical execution. And then it's not so far beyond understanding why Maimonides earlier would say you could kill the informer, because the informer is going to end up killing someone who's not, shouldn't be getting the death penalty for such an act. You could understand why Maimonides was so strict and harsh with his language there. Nonetheless, even though we tend to go out in favor of not bringing things up, and not informing on a person to the government, the Shulchan Aruch in source number 13 rules the following. He says, Misho sek beziufim b'chadomeh. Someone is engaging in fraud or the like. The question is, what is the like? But fraud or the like. V'yesh lachush shiyazik rabim, matrin bo shelo yaseh. Someone's committing fraud, unethical behavior, and there's a concern that it's going to impact the public, the masses. I don't know what the line is between two people. Is that the public? Is it not? I'm not sure. Matrim bo shelo yaseh. The first thing you do is you confront the person and you say, you need to stop this. You cannot continue doing this behavior. V'me'eno mashkiach. But if he does not stop, then Yochalim Lemosro, then one can inform the government. In other words, informing is like the last step. First, you try to take care of it internally. But if there's if this was harming one or two people, maybe we'd say you try to deal with it internally. It can't get dealt with internally. It's impacting only one or two people. You can't do anything, according to the Shulchan Aruch. But if it impacts the masses, and internally you weren't successful, then you can report it to the government. But at this stage, in the Shulchan Aruch, source number 13, there is permission to inform, but first it's got to be damage to the masses, and you have to have tried to take care of it internally, and it was unsuccessful. That's all the Shulchan Aruch, up until source number 13. Then comes source number 14. Source number 14 is a potentially controversial, questionable source. We'll read it, and as we read it, I think you'll get a sense as to why it's questionable, or why it's somewhat controversial. This is the Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Yechiel Michel Epstein, lived in Russia in the end of the 1800s, beginning of the 1900s. Here's what he says. Yadua, l'chol korei hadorot. It is a known thing to anyone who studies history. Shebizman ha-kadmon, in ancient times, midinot ha-rechakot, in ancient times, long, long time ago, in a land far, galaxy far, far away, midinot ha-rechakot, very far away. Lo ha-yal ish bitachon begufo mamono. A person had no protection, no bodily protection, no financial security. Bipnei ha-shogdim va-anasim, af shenasu alehem shem mishra, kiyadua gam hayo me'ezim midinot me'Africa. He says, the person was always at physical or financial risk because of bandits and bullies. Even those who became elevated to positions of power, that didn't mean they were going to now start being good people. You could have people in positions of power who were taking advantage financially, bodily, of people, their subjects. He says, Keadua gam hayom me'ezem idino be Africa. And he says, this happens even today. He's probably writing this in the end of the, some 1890s, talking about in Africa, you have these kingdoms that this happens. Hashor ve'achamas. The robbery that the government does in these places. And then he says the following. Ve'al tov yizachru malchei Europa. And so the governments, those kingdoms in Europe, should be mentioned for good. What kingdom in Europe? Uviyichud adoneinu hakira mirusia. And the Tsar of Russia in particular. Va'avotav ha-kesarim, and his parents, u'malchei Britannia, and the British kings, these leaders, these governments should be praised. Shepirshu kanvei memshalatam ba'artzot ha-rechukot. They spread the wings of their government over all these distant lands. L'man yihi l'chol ish bitachon al gufom ha-mono. And they spread their wings, their government over these lands, so that every person should be have security of their bodies and of their wealth. But ofen shasherim lo yitzarchu lestir atzmam, the wealthy don't have to hide themselves. Shlo yishalu b'monam, so they don't get robbed and looted. They don't have to worry about it. God bless the Tsar for his great kindness in protecting the wealthy. No bad comes. It's protecting people, he says. So they don't get killed. And the real concern that all the passages in the Talmud and all the authorities were talking about, all the times that people said you cannot inform, you have the risk of informing, all of that is talking about not places like Britain, not places like Tsarist Russia. Rather, it's talking about cases of these other places where who knows what's going to happen. Ki masur mashina chaver bnei shodedim ke'ele. If you inform on someone, you are really putting that victim at risk of killing that victim. If you inform on someone, that person who's being informed upon is at risk of dying because the government's there. Who knows what they're going to do? You have no idea. But in a place like Britain, where the government you can trust is going to be a just and proper government, they're not going to take advantage of people. You inform on someone, they're not going to be executed in the street. It's taken care of appropriately, there's no problem of informing because the government's going to take care of things appropriately and correctly. This is what the Aruch HaShulchan says. So this is subject to a lot of discussion. People say, I'm not such an expert in world history, but the Tsar was so great. We're going to say, oh, Tsarist Russia, there, people were taken care of. The Tsar never took advantage of. I don't know that that's true historically. So many people say that this was just added by the, forced to be added by the censors. They just say this, that it doesn't apply in our place, because we're a good government. Yeah, Miriam, go ahead.
But certainly Kal Vachomer, a government like the Canadian government, I'm not saying it's infallible in any sort of way, or the government, the secular government of Israel, again, not infallible, but not a murderous government.
Correct.
So it's the pendulum goes the other way, and if someone does the wrong thing, we might even have the obligation.
Correct. And that's why this Aruch HaShulchan is significant, to say that in the countries, what the Aruch HaShulchan is essentially saying is exactly that. In a place like Britain, or Russia, he's saying, or in a place like Canada or Israel, the U.S. today, the rules about not informing wouldn't apply. That's precisely the point that he's making. It's only when you have no idea what the government's going to do, that's where the risk comes up. Yes, decline.
The government, not long ago, told the banks that they could basically hold up the money or steal the money, or however you want to say it, of people who were protesting against the government. don't think that it can't happen in our wonderful country either.
Okay, so it's an interesting point. Yeah, well, I don't want to get too deep into politics right now, but yeah, go ahead.
I'm not getting into politics.
Okay.
I'm going to try and give you a scenario that is a little bit more relevant to accounting.
Yeah.
You have a client. You've had the client for years. The client comes to you one day and says, you know, got into a new business and it's a retail operation. It's whatever it is, Schmutz's, a convenience store. And you're looking at his financial books and records that he's giving you for the year end. You look at him and say, is this really viable? And he looks at you and he says, you know, yeah, it really is, because there's a very large cash component, but you don't see that. Yeah, what else is new? He's not Jewish, by the way. And he says, but I'll tell you more about it, but I really have to go because I have another meeting. I have to go see somebody else today. Or my wife has got a doctor's appointment. I promised her I'd join her. But let me send this to you in an email. And he sends you the email and admits to the fact that the cash is not being reported. Do you have an obligation? I mean, obviously, one option is you say goodbye client, but the other obligation is, if you accept the engagement and he doesn't want to move on this one, do you let the authorities in some way know that this guy is living on a...
Yeah, no, so
because of cash.
Yeah, so what would happen is, I mean, so this could tie into the top of page number 5, source number 15, this responsa of Rabbeinu Asher, who's a medieval rabbi, who basically makes the point that we've sort of been alluding to earlier, but the point that he makes, and it's already 125, but the point that he makes, I'll read it quickly in English, one who seeks to turn over his fellow's property to a bully, the sage is compared to one who's pursuing to kill. Since once he falls to the trap, they have no mercy on him. Today, they take a little money, tomorrow all of it, and in the end, they hand over to kill him because maybe he'll confess that he has more money. Therefore, he is like someone pursuing someone's life who can be killed to save the life of the would-be victim. In other words, if there's a risk, the whole concern of informing is that there's a risk that it's, even if it's starting on money, it's not going to stop at money. So I would say in the scenario that you're bringing, if the whole issue, the unethical behavior that we're dealing with, is only money, and we're dealing with a government who's going to stop at money, they're not going to say, oh, and by the way, because you did this, you're now sentenced to death. If they're not going to go that far, don't rely on me for anything. But I would think, on the basis of what the Aruch HaShulchan had said in source number 14 and what Rabbeinu Asher says in source number 15, it would say, yeah, you have absolutely, you should report it. It's a potential, I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough about how these things work. Who's the victim here? There's never, is there a victimless crime? Is there ever a victimless crime? Such a thing as a victimless crime? Someone's getting hurt. Right? Is it the public? Is it the taxpayers whose money is now getting misappropriated? What's that?
I said it's the government that's getting getting.
It's the government. Is the government the taxpayers? I don't know. It's an,
but the government is what funds all the public entities and, you know, safety, et cetera, et cetera. So it is technically, you know, his couple hundred thousand dollars is going to make a big, big difference. But technically, it goes toward keeping us safe, sound, and operating.
Yeah, I mean, I would think, again, don't rely on this for any practical advice, but I would think that from the basis of what we're seeing here, that yeah, it would only, the only reason not to, so I mean, you could go back to the earlier thing, you know, I guess you would have to determine, is this considered law? I would think, Jared Ann Standing sitting here as a non-accountant would think, that stealing from the government would be still a loss. There's someone losing out here. The taxpayers, it's the amorphous, whatever the government is. I would still think lo ta'amod al dam ra'echa. You can't just stand idly by. And the concern about being an informer doesn't apply because this person's not going to end up dead because of this. So that's what I would think. But it's a good question. It's a tricky question, and that's why they pay the big rabbis the big bucks to solve those types of questions. One last scenario to look at is what's that?
I said you'll get there one day.
Yeah. Source number 16, the responsa of Rabbi Yosef Shalom Eliashiv, passed away about 10 years ago, was posed with the following scenario. There was a yeshiva there in the city of Ashdod in Israel. There was a religious place, and there was a communal, like, tzedakah box, essentially. Coins, money was put in this communal box, and it's been stolen from. And the community has every reason to believe that it was one specific person who's been stealing from these funds. And this person is a very influential person. This person is the child of a very influential family. So if word gets out, it could be a big deal because this is not nobody. This is someone of a significant family. And there's also potential that the person here is actually a big Torah scholar. And if word comes out that this Torah scholar from this influential family is stealing from the community, that would be a chilul Hashem, that would be a desecration of God's name. It also would be bad for the community in general. And is this lashon hara? So the question was, should they report? Now they don't have the means to know for sure who the person is. They suspect so and so, but could they report it to the police, the Israeli police, and let them take over the investigation to really determine who it was? That was the question. And Rav Eliashiv, in his answer, in the last paragraph in source number 5, in his answer, he says, mitzvah l'dayan l'akoto l'yasro. There's a mitzvah on the judge to punish a criminal on the basis of what they estimated is true and to punish them. Al pi umdan da'ato shiyodeh be'emet. On the basis of what he can see. There's always a risk that the judge is going to get something wrong, but the judge, on the basis of what he can know, has to judge. And he concludes and he says that even though you might say that there's a concern about Mesira handing over to the government, who's going to deal with it internally, why would you report it to the government? He says the whole concern about informing on a suspect will lead to these unjustified execution. But this concern is not applicable in our days. He says in modern day Israel, that's not a concern anymore. And so, strictly speaking, one is permitted to turn to the authorities to report this, to let them take over the investigation. Turn it over to the government! How could you do that? You can't turn over someone to the government. Deal with it internally. He says, no, but the reason to not report to the government is because who knows what the government is going to do. That you know what the government's going to do here. They're going to investigate. Maybe the person will serve some time in prison, but they're not at risk of life. So you should report it. Now, in the end, he says it's up to the rabbi who asked the question to determine whether he thinks it's appropriate to or not. I don't know what happened at the end of the story. He says maybe you've decided in your community you don't want to go externally. You're the rabbi of the community. You could decide to take care of it in-house, but you have the right to take care of it, to send it to the, take it to the authorities. It's a 1:31 right now. We started it a little bit over, but I want to just make sure that people, to conclude, we've seen various different aspects to this about reporting. Do I have a right to it? Should I keep things hidden, or do I have an obligation to stand up and report it? And the idea would be yes. We've seen that you have to stand up and make a comment. And even the concern of Mesira, turning someone over to the government, If we're dealing with a just government, a government like Canada, there's reason to say that that issue does not apply anymore because you don't have to be concerned that the person's going to be killed. Justice should be done, and you should make sure to hand that person in to the proper authorities so that justice is taken care of, at least according to what we've seen here. Thank you, everyone, for coming and for participating and for learning. If you have not yet put your name in the chat box, please, please, please do so. So that make sure that you can get credit, either message it to me in the chat box or message it to everyone. So make sure that you can get credit. And I'm happy. People should certainly feel free to leave. But if there are any, it looks like Miriam, you might have had a question. I'm happy to entertain. We can continue to talk more. I don't have anything to do at the immediate moment, so I'm happy to continue to talk right now.
So, handing it over internally, sometimes isn't that give the worst result? Because if the person who's at fault is a great scholar or the son of a scholar, there's a lot of protexia here, and maybe you really do need to go to an external party who isn't going. I don't know. I missed a little bit because my phone went out. But what about the whole thing with Walter? Don't inform. Better to tell, the people internally who are just going to turn their backs and not care about the victims because they're more concerned about the reputation of wonderful people who turn out to be the opposite of wonderful people. It's so frightening, and it almost, to me, harkens to what Haman said to Ahasuerus. These people are separate. They don't do things the way we do it. We need to live amongst people, and be very scrupulous and ask for people and expect people to keep the laws and not have to pander to them because they're one of us. If they're doing the wrong thing, they did the wrong thing, not the informer.
Yeah, you raise an interesting point, and I did see some. I didn't quote this here. We didn't really go down this road about the Chilul Hashem aspect of things, desecrating Hashem's name. So I don't remember who it was who I saw, but someone said it's a worse Chilul Hashem. It's a greater disgrace to God if you don't report, because when this comes out, because things always come out, it's going to not only be this person did something wrong, but there was a cover up as well. And that's worse. But it's a good point. It's a really good point. Great. Any other thoughts? Any other questions? All right. Everyone have a wonderful day. And thank you everyone for coming and for learning. And if you haven't yet put your name in the chat box, do it right now.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay.